You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today's topic is movies of 2013, and here to discuss it with me, as we did last year, is my good friend Bobby Polite. Welcome aboard the White Rocket again, Bobby.
Hi, how you doing?
It's really
glad to be here.
It's good to have you back on, and you're going to be the first guest of this new run of the show. We've been on hiatus for several months, and I wanted to tell the listeners right quick there were sort of three reasons why the show has been on hiatus. One is I was working on the new novel Legion 2 Sons of Terra, which took up a lot of my spare time the last 6 months trying to get that, which is the middle volume in the shattering sort of gothic military sci-fi trilogy of novels. Also, we've been the Auburn football team did really well this fall. You may or may not have heard. And the sister show of this program is the AU Wishbone, which got picked up before the season started now by the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. So John Ringer and I, were suddenly sort of expected by higher up people to do a weekly show and not mess around, right, to crank that thing out every week. And it was a great opportunity, and we had a lot of fun doing it, and certainly we had a season worth talking about. But that took a lot of time, too, and trying to increasingly make it more sophisticated in terms of the audio clips and so forth took up all the time. And then lastly, I had recorded some shows at conventions last summer and fall to use to kind of fill that hiatus. But I made some technical mistakes with my laptop computer, which I now understand it will never make again. But those shows pretty much got ruined, which was incredibly disappointing to me. I had an interview with David Weber that just pretty much is unintelligible, not because of David Weber or me, but because of the audio. It's really disappointing. So we got all that squared away, and hopefully now we're at the beginning of a brand new run of White Rocket shows. I've got a lot of new topics and a lot of new guests lined up. But Bobby, you're number one out of the gate to talk about the movies of 2013. We're going to try to squeeze this sucker into an hour. It'll probably go over a little bit, but let's go ahead and get going on it. I think that, you know, Bobby and I were talking a minute ago. I think what we probably want to do is go more or less in order that they came out. Although I have to say, I saw two movies this last week, and I don't know what order they go in. So I'll include them at the end if we haven't, you know, if you haven't gotten to them before me. Why don't you kick us off? We're just going to go back and forth, and if we've both seen a movie, we'll both say something about it, and only one of us has, we'll just one of us say. So
the order they came out. Well, I don't have them in that order, but
What order do you have them in?
Like I said, I have them in the order I saw them. Like I saw Parker, and I saw a couple of movies that came out early in the year, later in the year.
Okay.
So we'll start with Parker.
Yeah,
I know you saw it.
That's the number one movie as far as chronologically on my list. Yeah, it was the one that came out like in January of last year. So sure.
I was really kind of surprised by this movie. I'm a big Westlake fan.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't read the Parker novels really until this year, though I had my biggest exposure to Parker was, you know, the old Payback movie.
Right.
And I was kind of skeptical going into this as to whether I would enjoy it or not. I did enjoy it. I don't think it was actually Parker.
No.
It was kind of Parker in some places, but he's not like – he takes on roles, but he's not like master of disguise. I don't see Parker running around as a cowboy.
No.
From Texas, that kind of thing.
No.
It was brutal, which it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with I was reading some stuff about the movie. I think I agree with – I think it was the director who said that if Westlake were alive, he would not have allowed them to use the Parker name on this movie.
No.
That was done by his wife. I think she allowed them to use the Parker name. Mm-hmm. But it's a Jason Statham movie, and I'm a sucker for Jason Statham movies, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree with you all the way across the board there. I'll say a couple of things about it. Yeah, Westlake's plan was that he wanted a producer-director to come in and do the series, and he wasn't going to let anybody have the name Parker until they agreed to do the series, and that's why Mel Gibson was Porter. And why the guy in Point Blank, Lee Marvin, was something else other than Parker. He was saving that name for the series. And so because they use the name, I hold out hope that maybe they'll do more because it's such a great series of books. But I've always said that the actor to me that looks like Parker is John Hamm from Mad Men. And he would just have to be a lot darker and tougher. But yeah, it was definitely more of a Jason Statham movie than a Parker movie. But that being said, they included his girlfriend. They had a lot of elements that were from the books that I was really happy to see in a movie for the first time. So,
well, I like that he had a crew, because the one thing when I started reading the novels is he's the main character, but he's always assembling a crew.
Oh yeah, and the plot often, not always, but often turns on one of his members of his crew screwing up or being greedy. And him having to deal with both the authorities and deal with his internal issue. You know, Parker is a crisis manager. He's a problem solver, and he's incredibly competent at that, you know. And so, it was good, I agree, to see them touch on some of those other elements from the books that other movies have not tried to do. So that was cool. Yeah, because he was very much the lone wolf in Payback.
Yeah, and that's not actually even exactly the case in the movie because the whole thing goes down around a big crew. Though I have to say I really like Payback too. Something about the style of that movie was enjoyable. Both the theatrical cut and the original director's intended cut are good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you know the one thing that critics seem to take away from Parker, probably people that were not like us that didn't know from, you know, Parker himself at all, was that Jennifer Lopez was really good in it. And that was it had been a while since she'd done something kind of like that. And it was kind of neat to see her, you know, return to form.
She added a good human element. You actually, she got me to feel for her because she was in such a bad situation, and watching her toy with, am I going to get involved with this criminal? Am I not going to get involved with this criminal? I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And I felt that Michael Chiklis did a really good job as a pretty good, not too over the top bad guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I like Parker. It got a 41% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But again, these are people that don't know Parker, don't know Westlake, and didn't really know what they were seeing and just thought of it as just a generic crime movie. I can forgive them for that. But yeah, it was one of my favorite movies of the year for sure. All right, let's see. The next one on my chronological list was Oz the Great and Powerful. You got to understand going in now, I have a 14-year-old and a 5-year-old daughter, and so I see movies that have tended to skew more toward the younger end now. And so I wouldn't have probably seen this movie a few years ago, but I saw it, and I pretty much enjoyed it. Was that one you saw?
I did not see it. I've got it actually recorded as on my TiVo as something to watch, but I have not sat down to watch it yet.
Okay. Well, all I'll say about it real quick then is I thought that Harry Osborne, the main actor.
James Franco.
Yeah, Franco was good. He's fun. I mean, he's kind of shifty. You never know if he's good or bad. And the special effects were great. I mean, it was just neat to see Oz from a different perspective because I haven't read the other Oz books or anything like that. So for me, it was kind of a whole new thing. And to me, it very much seemed like a sort of a Pixar, DreamWorks, one of those animated movies done with live actors. That's how it felt to me. So I liked it. What you got next?
I believe somewhere in there was Jack the Giant Slayer.
Okay, haven't seen that
somewhere
one.
Around that time. You haven't seen that one?
No.
It was better than I expected it to be, but that's mostly because it had a lot of negative reviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bland, but it's, you know, if you've got nothing better to do and you just want to sit down and watch a movie that doesn't have much depth to it, it's kind of enjoyable. It was kind of nice to see Ewan McGregor in there. He's got this the characters all talk in this sort of stilted way that I can't quite it's very formal the way they talk, and it was interesting to see it in the film. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just, you know, giants throwing trees at people. That's what it mostly ends up boiling down to be.
There you go.
I'm glad I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it, you know, when it came on HBO.
Yeah.
That's about all I can say about that movie.
Next up for me, and we're going to zip through some of these that we don't have a lot to say about, because I know there's some toward the middle that we're going to have a lot to say about and toward the end. Next for me is another movie that got in the 40s on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm looking some of these up, and I'll give you the numbers as I go along, as we go along. It's funny how in the movie world you often get two or three movies about the exact same thing that come out within like a month of each other. I remember years ago there were like two or three volcano movies. There were two or three meteor hits the earth movies. There were two or three underwater action movies. You know, like The Abyss was the third one, but there were the two cheap ones before it.
Leviathan and Deep Star Six.
Deep Star Six, yes. This year we got, among other things, we got two Attack the White House movies. Now, I'm not sure what's going on in the collective national psyche that we feel we have to attack the White House. I'm going to talk about the other one later because I don't remember exactly when it came out, and I only saw it last week. That would be White House Down, that which I call Die Hard with Obama. But Olympus Has Fallen has Aaron Eckhart as the president, interestingly. And it's a little more of like a Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, younger white guy rather than the Obama type character, you know, as the president. But these two movies had a very different feel. In fact, you know what? Let's go ahead and talk about both of them together because it might have well been the same movie done two different ways. Did you see either one of them?
No, I didn't see either one of them. Neither one of them looked very interesting to me.
Okay, well, I'll say this. They are very different movies in some ways. Of course, they both proceed from the assumption that somebody attacks the White House and you have the people out in the Pentagon or wherever trying to manage the situation, and then worrying about the chain of command and is the president dead, and then you have the lone wolf in the White House trying to save the day. Now, in Olympus Has Fallen, it was Gerard Butler as the Secret Service type dude trying to save the day. Basically, they're both Die Hard, right? It's just Die Hard in the White House. But Gerard Butler was very fun in that one. It's been several months since I saw it, but I remember I did like it. I had it in my, I had it as number 10 in my favorite movies of the year list because I had Parker number 4 for those that are playing, counting at home.
Wow.
Olympus Has Fallen. Eckhart and Morgan Freeman and Gerard Butler, they have a nice chemistry. I really enjoyed this one a lot, but this was, if I recall correctly, this was the one with like the Arab terrorists angle. Okay. White House Down, on the other hand, you have more the Obama president, right? The younger African-American president with an older white vice president, and the Speaker of the House is involved too. But it's all about Channing Tatum, who's terrible, of course, but does a good, you know, action hero type thing, as always. And the thing I liked about White House Down is it just absolutely goes, it should have called it White House Over the Top, because you get everything from a silo-fired missile blowing up Air Force Two in the air to this was the part where I was watching and I was just on the floor. I was like, you got to be kidding. They have the president and Channing Tatum in the limo, the presidential limo, doing donuts around the fountain in front of the White House as that famous black SUV with a minigun that pops out of the roof is chasing them and shooting them and just turning the thing into Swiss cheese. While the press corps and everybody is outside the White House gates watching and filming it, just to see that see the presidential limo driving all over the lawn of the White House while it's being shot up by a minigun from the other thing, I was just like, you got to be kidding. they don't miss any opportunity to throw in every possible action thing you could do in the White House. So, and it has a nice twist. You could kind of see it coming. And James Woods is really good as the sinister, maybe he's up to something, Secret Service chief too. So some really good actors in both. They're both just dumb popcorn movies, but I really got a kick out of both of them in very different ways. So definitely worth a DVD rental at least. What you got next?
What have I got next? Yes. I don't know where that brings us to. Does that bring us up to Iron Man 3? Do we want to get that monstrosity out of the way?
Well, I've got Oblivion before that. Did you see Oblivion?
Oh, Oblivion. I saw Oblivion just recently, actually.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
This is the Tom Cruise movie where they're on like a thing up in the a house up in the clouds or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's a post-apocalyptic movie where Tom Cruise and another woman are mining resources to
and another woman
fuel for the I can't remember her name.
I know, you said Tom Cruise and another woman.
Another woman. But yeah,
I
okay.
just thought that was for apropos. Okay.
Sorry, they're basically mining resources for a colony on Titan where humanity has apparently fled to. Not to give any more than that away. Mm. I enjoyed it. I liked it. It was intended to be a kind of a throwback to 70s style. Science fiction films.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, about halfway through the movie, I'm like, I know exactly where this is going. I know what the bad guy is. I know more or less what's going on. Mm-hmm. I was still into the movie because I didn't know who was going to live or die or exactly how it was going to resolve. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much enjoyed it. And I think I enjoyed it because it was a science fiction film that wasn't a franchise.
Yeah,
it didn't have Kirk or Spock or any of these other characters in it. So, I mean, it seems to me that franchise science fiction films nowadays have a shallowness to them, and you kind of know where they're going to go.
Yep.
And they're just big, giant advertisements for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I like this movie. It was a better movie than Tron Legacy, which is the director's previous attempt. And his next movie is going to be The Black Hole, which will be interesting to see.
Really? They're going to remake The Black Hole?
They are remaking The Black Hole, yes.
Will it have Vincent?
I have no idea. I haven't researched it beyond that. I just know that he's remaking The Black Hole.
You know, my little 5-year-old and I were watching The Black Hole about a month ago, and I hadn't seen it in years. And I was, as we were watching it, I kept thinking to myself, I could write so much better of a script using everything in this movie and just make it so much more entertaining and interesting. But A lot of people could.
more entertaining than being able to breathe in space and having giant, perfectly round, rolling meteors.
Yeah, I know. That are on fire in space, but anyway, yeah.
Slim Pickens who played Bob?
Yeah.
The old Western droid?
Well, that's right, Bobby.
Right, yeah. But Oblivion. Back to Oblivion. I loved the scenes. The cinematography was great. The design, the vehicle he had, and the mm-hmm. just the way everything came together was really good. I actually, it's a movie I want to sit down and watch again. And the music was fantastic.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you know, I agree with you that it was kind of a neat standalone science fiction film as opposed to an action-y science fiction film or a space fantasy science fiction film. It was neat. We did get a couple of sort of either post-apocalyptic or sort of dystopian future movies this year. That's another thing. We'll talk about I'll talk about Elysium in a little while. But, yeah, I had Oblivion as the first one up on my honorable mention list. It didn't make my top 10, but I did like it a lot. And I got to say, for all the crap that Tom Cruise takes, I do find him pretty effective in movies. I mean, I thought he was really good in Jack Reacher, even though he was nothing like Jack Reacher. And, you know, just his personality kind of sold that show for me. And I thought he was really good in this, and it was a very interesting sci-fi movie of its kind. It was a 53% on Rotten Tomatoes, so yeah. So thumbs up to Oblivion. There you go.
Well, you know, he's got a movie that's coming out early this year, I think. I can't remember the name of it right now, but he's basically some sort of futuristic soldier. I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, that kind of looks like Oblivion all over again. Just the feel of it makes me think that, so.
Well, now, as you say, we are up to what to me was by far the most disappointing movie of 2013. And let me just add, it took a lot to beat Star Trek Into Darkness for most disappointing movie. You had to really achieve a lot in disappointingness to beat out Star Trek Into Darkness for most disappointing movie. What would that movie be, Bobby?
Oh, for you, it's going to be Iron Man 3, but it's not my most disappointing movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah, it definitely was Iron Man 3 for me. Let's talk about that one first, and then we'll find out what yours was. Iron Man 3, where to begin?
For me, I can sum it up this way.
All right.
Robert Downey Jr. has become the focus of the movie. Mm-hmm. He got his friend to come in and direct the movie, and it's got too much Robert Downey Jr. doing Robert Downey Jr. things all throughout the movie to be an effective Iron Man movie. There are points in this movie, like when he's waiting for the armor to come to him and he's you know, doing his little shtick, that I'm like, I get it. Move on past this. This is boring.
Yeah.
You've become Johnny Depp to Iron Man. You know, he
that's a good way
it's
of looking
about
at it.
Him. And I don't want to see that. And I'm almost ready for an Iron Man reboot, but don't reboot it next year or the year after next. Wait 6 or 7 years. Not like Spider-Man.
Right. Well, you know, we're going to get at least one more of this because Avengers 2 is coming.
Well, at least that's going to be directed by Joss Whedon, and I think he will have more control of the movie than Shane Black did.
Right.
So it was a buddy cop film.
Yeah.
The movie was a buddy cop film.
Yeah. Downey has taken over Tony Stark. His portrayal of Tony Stark has become the orthodox portrayal of Tony Stark now, and it's all well and good, and I enjoy it, but it's never been Tony Stark. But here's the thing.
It's Spider-Man.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. I have to say, it's Ezra Brakis, but I have to say this. People have criticized me talking about this movie at Dragon Con and other places as saying that I didn't like it because it wasn't enough like, you know, the comics or whatever. Please understand, my main objection to it, aside from what Bobby was just laying out, was the Mandarin. And I think at this point we can talk about the Mandarin. But here's the thing. It's not that, you know, I've had people say, well, you wanted that Chinese warlord Mandarin, and that's too racist, and you can't do that, so you need to get over it, Van. And I'm like, no. The direction they were taking him, the fake Mandarin, would have been fine with me. I don't care if he's a Chinese warlord, although he is called the Mandarin, okay? But I don't care if he's a Chinese warlord or what, as long as he's a badass who manipulates people and kills people and blows stuff up and pushes Iron Man to his limits. He is Iron Man's classic foe. He's his greatest adversary, and I simply wanted him portrayed that way. But instead of getting one, I would have taken Osama bin Mandarin just as well as the Chinese Mandarin. That would have been fine. But instead of getting a single imposing, terrifying Mandarin villain, we got two lame, stupid Mandarins. And I didn't like either one of them.
And Guy Pearce cannot menace on the screen for nothing. He's like the, well, we're out of people to pick for a villain. Go get Guy Pearce and throw him in the movie.
Yeah, he's like the turn when there's nothing left.
And you know, I didn't like the Mandarin thing. I figured out where the Mandarin thing was going, and I think in the middle of the second CNN-like news broadcast, I went, oh, he's a front. Mm. He's not even real. Mm. But the thing I hated most about this movie was the ending. It's a bunch of empty armors animated by a computer fighting a bunch of no-name, fire-breathing, glowing guys with guns. Mm. It's one of the most boring endings I've ever seen in my life. It's just ridiculous. It you don't care about any of these characters. I knew the moment that Pepper got powers that she was actually going to save Tony. Mm-hmm. It was like a fill in the blanks of Hollywood crap. They played it safe. They could have done something much more interesting with the movie,
yeah,
at least much more exciting, but they didn't do that. And the Extremis storyline, I don't know why people think the Extremis storyline is so good. It's dumb.
It is.
It basically says that Tony can't do anything on his own. He's got to have a virus do it for him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm tired of the hero requires magic object thing, which is we're going to get to with Thor, or the villain requires magic object thing. But anyway, sorry.
Well, I'm not going to say a lot more, but I've spent the entire year of 2013 pretty much talking about this movie everywhere I went, and I'm just tired of it. But it got a 78%. It's got the highest rating of anything basically we've talked about so far, inexplicably. And it's because this is the kind of movie that people that don't understand superhero movies think superhero movies really succeed when they're like, right? It had a cool twist about the villain, and it had a charismatic hero telling jokes, and it had lots of action scenes and all that. And so it paint by numbers, right? If you just connect the dots, oh, this is a great movie. But if you try to get into the spirit of it, and this is sort of the same thing with Star Trek Into Darkness, which is coming up next for me on this list, is that both of them played by numbers, right? They tried to connect the dots in a mechanical way that if you didn't try to get into the heart and soul of the movie, you'd think, oh, it's great. But if you actually care about the characters and the situation and try to put it into your heart, it's just flat and dead. And that's Iron Man 3, and that's also, if we can roll on into Star Trek Into Darkness and go ahead and get these out of the way, that's the thing I didn't like about Star Trek Into Darkness more than anything else. More than all of the inexplicable things that happen, and every scene in the movie is basically inexplicable, is the fact that it just had no heart. It never built up any emotion for me, and I'm sorry to just roll right into this one. Let me get to your take. Star Trek Into Darkness, go.
Okay, I can give you a take, but I'll tell you right now, I didn't see it. I couldn't bring myself to see it. I hated the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek because it was nothing but let's piece together a bunch of scenes and try to make Star Wars out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
and I just didn't want to go see this thing. I knew some of the stuff that happens. I mean, apparently they think they're clever because, ooh, Spock yells Khan this time.
Right.
You know, J.J. Abrams is one of the most overrated creators in Hollywood. He's a marketer. He's not an artist.
Right.
He knows how to put together scenes without telling a story. And I don't understand why he's got so much power, but I hope he surrenders Star Trek and goes on and screws up an already screwed up continuity in Star Wars, because I don't care what he does to Star Wars. I want my Star Trek back as an adventure science fiction film, not a Hollywood blockbuster.
Right.
Star Trek. And I know that doesn't necessarily make a lot of money for Hollywood, and we probably won't ever see it again, but that's what I want out of Star Trek. I want a brain in Star Trek. I don't want Scotty to have a little pet alien. Or be in an engineering section that looks like a brewery because, ooh, that's a joke. I hated that film, and I couldn't bring myself to see the second one.
Well, and the only thing worse than Abrams doing what you just described is when he's working from a script by Lindelof, who writes that way. So it magnifies the problems, because what you get is a strung together collection of really cool scenes that don't actually make any sense in conjunction with one another. And it also totally wasted Benedict Cumberbatch. There just was so much wrong with this movie that could have been so nice. Jim Yelton and I actually did a whole show about it a while back. So if you want to get my whole hour-long evisceration of Star Trek Into Darkness, just backtrack a few episodes from last summer, and you'll find where Jim and I talked about it. All right. Yeah, you didn't miss anything by not seeing it. You saved yourself even more anguish than you already feel. What's next on your list?
Well, I guess since we're moving that direction, I think Man of Steel was next to come out, right?
It can be. I saw Now You See Me before Man of Steel, but
I didn't see that. But
well, I'll catch it next. Go ahead and do Man of Steel.
Man of Steel is probably my most hated movie of the year. It's not most disappointing because I didn't expect much out of Zack Snyder to begin with.
There you go.
Let me start out by saying, I don't consider myself a big Superman fan. Mm-hmm. I don't read the comic books with Superman that much. I kind of liked him in the JLA, but there's something about Superman. He's like that guy you always depend on to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And because of that, when I see him in movies, I always get excited. And I really don't lie. It's weird to me, but this movie, they went so hard trying to make Superman a little darker, mm-hmm, that they ruin him. The thing about it for me is it's not necessarily what they did to Superman, but what the thing that bothers me the most about it is what they did to Pa Kent. He is supposed to be Superman's moral compass. He's the guy raising the alien to have human values.
Yeah.
And yet he tells him, yes, maybe you should let those kids die just to protect your secret. And then the scene where Pa Kent dies, he doesn't die of a heart attack. He just goes off to rescue a dog in a tornado and then looks up at his son and says, no, leave me here to die. And to me, that brings back what is one of my favorite lines in the 78 Superman. After Pa Kent dies from a heart attack, Clark is sad. He's sitting there thinking, I have the exact line is, all those things I can do, all those powers, and I couldn't even save him. The point being is that he couldn't prevent the heart attack.
Right.
But in this movie, that line would be, all those things I can do, all those powers, and I wouldn't even save him.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
Right. Yeah.
That's so wrong. And then the movie just descends into destruction porn at the end. And
with no human face or no consequences.
Thousands of people die in Metropolis because that thing happens immediately. There's no chance to evacuate that. And there are scenes of Superman throwing his bad guy into buildings, running him through buildings, killing thousands of people. And it's just baffling to me. And then they make a big deal out of him killing Zod at the end when he didn't need to.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. He's got complete control of him. He's got people trapped in the corner. Why didn't he just fly straight up? He doesn't fly straight up because they want him to kill him. They right. want to make him dark by having him kill him. And there's so many things in this movie that don't make sense. White, like they go through all this stuff where he's trying to protect his identity, but everybody in Smallville knows who he is. He pulled a busload of kids out, and the kids know. It's even implied that the kids know. Mm-hmm. So what's the point of trying to protect your identity? The whole movie makes no sense. It's like they tried to force Superman a certain direction.
Yes, that's it.
But they didn't think about the story itself.
That's exactly what they did. They had their ending. They had their destination in mind, and they forced things to go along that path, and it shows. This movie suffers from the same problems as Star Trek Into Darkness, which is that everything is contrived because the characters in it are serving the script rather than the other way around. It's the same exact problem. You would think Damon Lindelof wrote this one too.
Yeah, this was the movie that I actually went out of the movie just teeth clenched. I hated it. I hated it. I didn't expect it to be that bad. And I want Zack Snyder away from everything. Let him go off and do his little sucker punches and stuff like that. Just get him away from everything else.
Yeah, it basically makes Superman face a number of choices, and the choices that the writers force him to make are almost always the wrong choice.
And I don't have a lot of love for Christopher Nolan, at least not his Batman stuff.
Yeah.
But apparently he was actually against the whole idea of Superman killing people, but he got overridden.
Okay.
So that's what I've read. So,
all right. Well, let's lay that one to rest. It got, by the way, 55% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm glad to see
it didn't
get higher than that. Yeah. Now You See Me was actually the one movie I liked the most during the summer because it came along in the middle of Iron Man 3, Man of Steel, and Star Trek Into Darkness. And so it was the only thing I saw in the summer that I actually liked. I mean, it's basically sort of a sleight of hand illusion caper crime story and has a lot of twists and double blinds and stuff. And so I won't say anything more beyond it, except that it was a pretty fun movie and it really saved the summer for me, even though it wasn't that great. I have it at like number 5 on my list for the year, but it was a fun sort of caper movie. So I'm kind of a sucker for those. Okay. What do you have next?
Well, we can move to the movie that saved the summer for me,
which is
Pacific Rim.
Okay.
This was the movie I enjoyed most in the theater. It's not deep, but it was exciting. It was like, for me, it was like watching Star Wars again for the first time. I loved it. I felt like I went into it expecting it to be too mindless for me to enjoy, but it was a perfect combination of pulp and giant robots beating monsters up. And it didn't waste too much time trying to make a big explanation about why the monsters were. You just accept it and go with it and have fun with it. And I saw it twice in the theater, and both times I was just really excited to the movie. It just pulled me in, the visuals and the music behind the visuals, and I loved this movie. I'm glad that it made enough overseas that apparently they're writing a sequel.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, all the way through, it struck me as like a Japanese manga comic. Like it had those over the top human characters, you know, and then you had the big monsters and the robots and stuff, and then you had more sort of over the top cartoony human characters. That kind of put me off of it a little bit. Plus, the big robots smashing together tends to put me to sleep. I fell asleep on this movie in the theater. I bought it on Blu-ray just because it looked so beautiful. I wanted to see it at home on Blu-ray, and I fell asleep on it again. but that being – so there's still parts of it I haven't seen at all. But that being said, I really did like a lot of it. I mean, it's not a perfect movie by any means for me. It was my number four honorable mention movie of the year. It disappointed me just because people like you and John Q and some others were so like hyping it up and hoping for it to be good that my expectations got too high, I think. And when I finally saw it, I was like, yeah, it was okay. So I give the okay, you know, not bad by any means, but just it was all right. So,
well, you're right about it being manga. It had a lot of that, a lot of the trappings in the background, the way things were designed. You know, even down to the fact that you got a pair of guys with a pet walking around. The look and feel of the uniforms. There are a lot of characters in there that fit those kind of roles.
The Japanese girl with the colored hair being the.
Yeah.
All that. This one got 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's pretty cool. I'm glad it did that well. Let's see. You said Pacific Rim. Despicable Me 2. This is actually up for the Oscar for Best Animated, and Monsters University is not. So there's kind of an in-your-face to the old Pixar people.
Well, they need to be reset.
did you see Despicable Me 2?
I did, yes.
Liked it?
It was good. It wasn't as good as the first one. It didn't have the – I didn't feel it was as clever or as charming as the first one.
Right. Gave you more minions.
Yeah, it gave me more minions. I didn't know that I necessarily wanted more minions.
Right, exactly.
I think part of the problem is the first one, you know, is about Gru changing and his relationship with the girls. And this one is, you know, him finding a wife, only it's kind of not him finding a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't have that that emotional draw into the movie that the first one did.
Yeah, so. It's kind of a one-shot story, and this is just more. So that's
right.
Understandable. It's kind of like a superhero movie in that way, where the most interesting story sometimes is the origin, and after that you just get more, you know. So
right.
Well, let's transition then. Monsters University. Did you see it?
I did not.
Okay. I liked it okay. I did not like it as much as Despicable Me 2, but it had some really fun college-related, you know, stuff that they were involved in, obviously. It was kind of like Animal House with Pixar monsters. And so for that, I'll just say that it was fun. It's another good on video Animal House done with monsters. So I give it that. What you got next?
Let's see. I'm still trying to go. Like I said, I don't have the order that they came out, and we're jumping around my list. So
okay.
How about, did you see Riddick?
No, I haven't seen Riddick yet. It hadn't come out on video yet, and I didn't see it in the theater.
Yeah, I actually just saw it. Yeah, I actually just saw it recently.
Okay.
I really liked Chronicles of Riddick. I liked the depth of the world that David Tui was creating there, and I was kind of disappointed in Riddick because it's more back to formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it starts out – it's an interesting combination of – survival film meets slasher film where the hero's the slasher meets Pitch Black at the end.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if you liked Chronicles of Riddick, which kind of advanced a story, this does nothing. It does kind of bring in a attachment to Pitch Black in that the antagonist of John's, the character from Pitch Black, his father's hunting down Riddick. And it does have a not quite typical ending, though it was kind of predictable. I guess I enjoyed watching it, but overall I was disappointed because it didn't have the richness that I felt was in Chronicles of Riddick.
You know, I just talked about Chronicles of Riddick a few months ago on this show, among other things, with Josh Reynolds of the Black Library, because we both agreed that Chronicles of Riddick is one of several Warhammer 40,000 movies, but not in name, right?
And, well, a friend of mine likes to call it the best Conan movie ever made.
Yeah, that's
about
too.
A barbarian who makes himself king.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's basically Conan in a Warhammer 40,000 movie. It absolutely is. Yeah. The other really good Warhammer 40,000 movie is Event Horizon. But anyway, Yeah, this one got 58%. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I like the character. I didn't like Chronicles of Riddick when it first came out because I was expecting something different. But going back and watching it earlier this year on video, I really did enjoy it, kind of knowing what was coming. So I have next on my list chronologically World War Z, which I actually only saw recently. Did you see that one?
I did not see that one.
Okay. A couple things about it. Brad Pitt's usually entertaining in whatever he chooses to do, more or less. And I've got another Brad Pitt movie coming up soon. This was basically taking The Walking Dead, amping it up globally, and shrinking it down into 2 hours. And so you got some good Walking Dead type, you know, person in a hallway chased by a zombie, improvising weapons, finding ways to defend himself. I'm not a zombie guy. I've quit watching Walking Dead just because it got so boring, and my wife and I were both just going to like throw the TV out the window if we had to watch another minute of it. But I, you know, to be able to cram a whole zombie story into 2 hours, that was good. So yeah, I have it in my honorable mentions as better than I expected it to be and kind of neat with some of the things it does with zombies. So there you go. What's next for you?
Did you see The World's End?
No. Is that another one of those Hot Fuzz,
Yeah, it's the third movie in the Cornetto trilogy. So
I haven't seen any of those.
But you haven't seen any of the fan. You need to get off your butt and watch those movies.
I've got them lined up on Netflix to see.
Plus, you want to watch them because it'll give you an idea of what you might expect from the Ant-Man movie.
Okay. So okay, very good.
World's End was a lot better. It was really good. It was not as good as Hot Fuzz for me. I think mostly because I just like the angle of Hot Fuzz with the demented, you know, community organization trying to keep their community perfect. But I really enjoyed The World's End. I thought it was a great, body snatchers kind of movie. I would highly recommend seeing it. Since you haven't seen it and you can't talk about it much, we'll just go with that.
Well, I will say it got 89% positive on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's a definite recommendation. I got them all lined up on my Netflix queue, so hopefully
watch them back to back to back.
Okay, awesome.
It's also to give a clue. It's also the best Martin Freeman movie that came out last year.
Oh wow, okay, yeah. He's between seeing him as Watson on the new Sherlock episodes, and then seeing him in The Hobbit, and of course he was the first place I ever saw him was The Office, the original British Office, which was so great. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. The next movie on my list that I saw while I was in Gatlinburg, actually with my wife, we saw it and liked it both, was The Wolverine.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
that was to me the best Marvel movie in a long time. I mean, it got so many things right. I mean, there are a few things that changed, but that they do that about every Marvel movie now. But I just kind of focusing on Wolverine, telling a story that goes from World War II all the way up to the present, and letting Wolverine do a bunch of crazy Wolverine stuff while focusing on kind of his samurai honor and all that. I love this movie. I thought it's actually number two on my favorite movies of the year.
Wow.
Number two.
It is the first X-Men movie that has garnered my interest again after, mm-hmm. you know, X-Men 2 really going all the way back to that point. I just never managed to make it into the theater to see it, and I haven't had a chance to watch it on video or anything yet.
69%. You know what we need to do is we need to do an X-Men movie show where we talk about all the ones that have come out, and maybe we can do it after Days of Future Past comes out.
Do you really want bitter X-Men fan to talk about the X-Men movies?
Maybe I should find somebody else.
Because I'm just going to harp about the fact that they've just been really, really mean to Scott Summers.
Well, that's
all I'm going to do.
Well, I'm really looking forward to Days of Future Past. So that's one of my favorite comic stories. So. All right. Yeah.
But it's not going to be that.
I know, but still, we got that and Guardians of the Galaxy coming up. So I'm really excited for this summer. Okay. What do you got next?
Gravity.
Oh yeah. My number three movie of the year, right?
I was oddly enough, I was actually expecting to be wowed when I saw this movie, and it did not disappoint.
Yeah,
I didn't overestimate what I was going to see. I really enjoyed the performances by Sandra Bullock and George Clooney in this movie, and the whole disaster movie in space. You know, you can get over the fact that, you know, her changing orbits and things like that probably couldn't be done, yeah. But beyond that, it was amazing. The scene where she's on the International Space Station and she's trying to get in to, I think, get some fuel cells or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And behind her, you start seeing the debris tear apart the station in total silence.
Total silence, yeah.
Is amazing.
It's a movie that finally understands that it's actually more dramatic to have things in space happen silently than with all the fake sound effects, you know. That was very effective, I thought.
Yeah, I really, really like this movie. I'm glad I saw it in the theater. I'm glad I saw it in 3D.
Oh, in 3D. Well, yeah, I saw it regular D. But yeah. But yeah, my older daughter and I saw it, and we've been telling my wife ever since that she's got to see it. So we're definitely getting the Blu-ray. I don't buy DVDs at all anymore, and I only get a Blu-ray when it's something I really think is going to look good on my big TV and will be fun. So we'll be definitely getting this on Blu-ray. Gravity, my number two movie. And Sandra Bullock is up for the Oscar, too, for it. So, and it's up for Best Picture, so we'll see what happens.
Good luck.
Let's see. The next one on my chronological list is Europa Report, which I only saw recently on video. And I think
you saw
it.
Too.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Okay. To me, this shows what can be done with like $1.75 production value and, you know, trying to generate some tension and drama in a sci-fi monsterish type movie. What did you take from it?
I took that I don't really like found footage movies, but every now and then one of them surprises me.
Yeah.
I thought it was suspenseful. I liked the story. I liked the way they developed characters and the things that happen, you know, on the way to Europa and when they're on Europa. It was definitely worth watching. It was a breath of fresh air in a world of franchise sci-fi.
That's so true. I'm a big fan of this small but growing genre of people in space dealing with suspense/horror stuff. You know, I mentioned Event Horizon. There's like what, Sunshine.
Sunshine, yeah.
There's a couple of others that are escaping me. What's the one? Pandorum is one of my favorites. I love Pandorum. And this one kind of fit in with that to a certain degree. They're all sort of medium budget movies. They're not big budget blockbusters, but they have good scripts and interesting characters. And they all more or less harken back to Alien to some degree, I think. Sort of, some of them more or less. So, let's see. What do you have next?
Let's see. I'm not sure what's next on the list. I think my next one's probably going to jump all the way to Thor. So
yeah, me too.
If you've got something in between. No, okay.
Thor too. Thor the Dark World. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I the villain was boring and hardly had any screen time.
I know, and he's one of my favorite doctors. He's the ninth doctor, and I love Eccleston, and he's just inside a plastic mask or something almost, and he has no way to emote, no way to reach the audience. That was the single most disappointing thing about this movie to me, but it did nothing to harm the movie for me. But I was so disappointed that we just get almost, you wouldn't know Christopher Eccleston was in the movie.
Right. No, I didn't recognize him. I like him too, but I didn't recognize him as the character.
Yeah.
He's unfortunately, see, they've got another problem there too. They're forcing him to speak a fake artificial language. Mm-hmm. That carries no emotive quality to it at all.
Yeah.
So that doesn't help. It doesn't help help him be any more menacing. I think Marvel's got a problem in that they're recycling the ancient artifact of ultimate power in the hands of a villain.
Because it's easy.
Storyline way too much. I want my villains to stand alone, and I swear if Ultron has to have the ultimate thingy of doom to be a badass in Avengers 2, I'm going to be pissed off.
Yeah.
We're already going to have, unfortunately, the Infinity Gauntlet, which is one of my least favorite comic stories. And we're going to have, it's going to start with Guardians of the Galaxy and go through the third Avengers movie, I assume. I just don't want to see that. I hated the thing I hated most about Thor was the end credit scene with the Collector. Here, we're two Asgardians. We're going to give you this ultimately powerful gem to this guy who is creepy and keeps girls in cages. There can't be anything wrong with him.
That was kind of odd decision making there, wasn't it?
I don't understand that. It's so forced.
But you're not supposed to think about it that way. You're supposed to think, ooh, the Collector, cool.
It would have been far more interesting if the Collector had gone to Niflheim? No. It had gone to the dark world and found the soul gem in the wreckage.
Yeah.
That would have been it would have been you don't have him say anything. You just have a character and you're looking at him going, "Who is that guy?" And oh my God, he just picked up a soul gem.
Yeah.
That would have been far more interesting than the very forced, "Here you go. Ultimate power. Be a bad guy. Thanks."
Yeah, that was pretty stupid. Those things being said, though, this was my number one movie of the year because everything it does right to me, it just totally does right. I love all the supporting characters they've added. I love the way they do Thor in it. I love that he can stand on his own as a leading character, unlike to some degree in the comics. I always felt he was sort of awkward as a leading character, but great in the Avengers, not as great in his own book. But I love both movies. I just was totally thrilled. I love it.
I felt there was better chemistry between Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman in this movie than there was in the first movie. And the first movie is I love the first movie. Every time I watch it, I get little chills because I can't believe I'm watching Jack Kirby's Space Gods in a film.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is working and people like it. That's amazing.
That was my favorite thing. My two favorite things about the first Thor movie. One is that Hemsworth actually was able to be Thor because it was going to be so hard to find somebody that could pull that off, that could be the big hulking guy, but also be lovable and likable and all that. And they did that. And of course, the other thing was that it was Jack Kirby's cosmic stuff. I love that. But you got to admit, this movie, they really did kind of what Marvel's figured out is find actors who do some shtick that people enjoy and milk it. And so the Downey of this movie was Loki.
Oh, well, he makes a movie every time. He was a better villain in this movie than Malekith was.
By far. So, yeah, great, great movie. We got to move.
And they managed to sneak in that classic scene of Loki on the throne. So
yeah. And we even got a Mew Mew when the hammer flew by.
That got a little old.
I like her.
I like Kat Denning too, but one more Mew Mew and I would have been like, oh, stop it.
All right, we got about five more movies to go on my list. Let's see.
Go ahead.
Next up on my list is Frozen.
I did not see that.
Okay, good. I can say very quickly, a good X-Men movie. All right.
Really?
It's Ice Woman, basically. Yes. It's a mutant. They even say, was she born with it or is it an evil spell? And they say she was born with it. I'm like, oh, it's an X-Men movie. Cool. All right. What's next on your list?
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Haven't seen it.
I saw it yesterday. Yes.
My daughter saw it yesterday.
I don't know why it's gotten bad reviews. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. It's very uplifting. It's charming and it has gorgeous cinematography.
Okay.
I go out and see it. It's about 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. And you know, as long as you're not a total cynic, you probably will enjoy the movie.
Well, you know, my wife and I were talking about seeing it. It's one of the cheap theaters, so maybe we'll go see it. Okay. Let's see. Next for me, another one that my wife and I went to that she was really interested to see. I had never seen Mary Poppins. I didn't know what the crap was going on in this movie.
Oh, you saw the
Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah. I haven't seen that.
I liked it. It's just a character piece. I was really interested in seeing Tom Hanks as Walt Disney. That was fun. And the rest of it, I didn't really understand, but it had some good character moments. And, you know, so I liked it. It wasn't my favorite movie by any means, but I enjoyed it. I have since seen Mary Poppins, and I get it more now. So, okay, what's next on yours?
My most disappointing movie of the year.
Oh, don't say it.
The Desolation of Smog.
Oh no! Why?
Why?
Yeah, well, you're a Hobbit guy, and I'm not.
I wanted.
Oh no.
Peter Jackson to treat The Hobbit with the same respect he showed Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it.
Now you're right. You're right.
There was no reason to have a completely whole cloth, stupid mousetrap like forge scene where they're trying to encase Smaug in molten gold using a mold that is conveniently placed, hundreds of years ago. That whole scene, I hated that scene with the passion. I wanted this movie to do a few things for me. I wanted it to be suspenseful. I wanted it to be serious. And I wanted it to finally put a dragon on the screen that was better than Vermithrax. Mm-hmm. It failed in every respect. Mm. Not only that, Smaug looks like Vermithrax. Dragon Slayer. You've seen Dragon Slayer, right?
That's one of my favorite movies.
And not only, when he flies out of the mountain, he has that dive that basically is from that movie.
Yeah.
Think about this. This is a movie called The Hobbit. Bilbo's not in this movie that much.
No.
Instead, we get Spider-Man masquerading as Legolas.
Yeah.
The Legolas scenes are actually worse than the whole Smaug Forge scene, because he's not even supposed to be in the book, but he takes over the movie.
Yeah.
I don't care about him hunting these orcs that they've added into the movie. I don't care about that whole scene with the barrels. Was so over the top, and I just don't want to see that. I want Legolas excised from this movie completely. I want somebody to release a cut of this.
The Bobby cut.
You know, originally this was supposed to be two movies,
yes.
And it became three movies. And you know why it became three movies? So they could add those Legolas scenes in, and they can add that stupid Forge scene in. Because otherwise, if you cut those out of this movie is an hour long.
Yeah, you're right.
The spider scene was cool. Where Bilbo fights the spiders. I like the fact that you could hear them talk when he had the ring on.
Yeah.
Because I wondered if they were going to have the spiders talk like they do in the book.
Yeah, that was neat.
Some of the extra scenes that they added, like the scenes with the Elven King, I like that. I actually like Tauriel, a completely made-up character. And the reason I like Tauriel is because of one scene with Killy when he's in the jail cell, and the fact that they have an emotional connection going there, because if you know where the book goes, that actually brings you deeper into the book. You care more about Killy given where the book goes, as opposed to the way things happen in the book where the dwarves are just kind of there in the background most of the time. I like that addition, but the Legolas stuff is just terrible. It's like somebody from what, New World, New Line, wherever they are, came in and went, well, no, put Hollywood blockbuster crap in that again.
Well, I got to say, this was your Iron Man 3 even more than Iron Man 3. I think the way it was for me, I liked it. The first movie, I liked the parts that the critics didn't like the songs and everything at the beginning, because that's how it's supposed to be. But it dragged way out too long, I thought. I thought they just dragged the first one out way too long at the end. This one, I thought, at least had interesting things happening as they dragged it out. This comes in as my number 6 movie of the year. I was hoping it would be in the top 3. The fact that it's number 6 shows that I agree with you to a certain extent. I totally get where you're coming from, and I don't refute anything you're saying. I'm just saying that for me, that stuff didn't bother me as much as it does you, and that's to be expected because, again, you're the Hobbit guy. We get that. But no, I didn't like it as much as I was hoping I would, but I did like it a whole lot.
Well, it was so disappointing to me. I'm not even sure I want to see the third one. Mm. I mean, to me, Peter Jackson jumped the shark when he made King Kong, and he hasn't recovered yet.
Yeah, that was sad.
Now, that said, the third one's going to have the Eagles in it, and I get goosebumps every time I see the Eagles on screen, so I probably will be in the seat. I just don't expect it to be very good. I expect more over-the-top Legolas action leading up to the Battle of Five Armies, which I expect to be preposterous.
This one got 75% positive on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's about right, at least for me. Let's see. I've got 3 more on my list we're going to get through here before my wife kicks me out of the bedroom. Elysium was next for me.
I did not see Elysium. I was trying to see it mainly just for this show, just so I could comment on it, but I was not able to find it. I just didn't have the time.
This is the Matt Damon sort of bookend to Oblivion. It's another sort of – it's not really post-apocalyptic. It's more just sort of dystopian future. This is by the director who did District 9, the South African, I believe, guy, right?
Yes.
And it has a lot of social commentary. I saw a lot of political arguments over this movie after I watched it about people saying socialism was better and all that. I think really it was just saying that the 1% shouldn't not only poop on the 99%. They shouldn't go off into a space station and just absolutely poop on the 99%. And so it is sort of a storming of the Bastille type movie, if you know what I mean, you know. So yeah. It's not the great Marxist revolution, but it has a little bit of that in it. So I liked it a lot. I recommend it. And it's got a lot of good action too.
Cool.
What else do you have on your list?
Actually, my list is – the list I had prepared for this is done. So if okay. You go ahead.
Two more. You have not seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
No.
We saw that a couple of weeks ago at the sort of dinner theater we have that we just discovered here and really, really enjoyed it. I mean, I think it sets a record for the most F-bombs that go off in it, you know. But it's a very funny, entertaining movie. It's funnier than I expected a Scorsese movie to be. But and it's got a lot of nudity, too. So it's got a lot of language and a lot of nudity. But if that doesn't bother you or if you even enjoy that, you will really get a kick out of it because it's a Jonah Hill. I despise Jonah Hill, but he's actually fairly entertaining in this. This, I believe, Australian or South African lady that plays the blonde bombshell, she was pretty good in it, very entertaining. And DiCaprio is good. His charisma kind of carries this movie the way he sells things to you. I couldn't have taken another sales pitch from him because the whole movie is about him being such a good salesman. But if he had done it, if he'd gone into one of his sales pitches again, I'd have had to be done with it. But I think it's just about right. And it's up for the Oscar. I haven't seen the what's the other one kind of like it that's Hudson is in and
Hudson?
No, what's
Bill Paxton?
No, there's a movie American Hustle.
Oh, right.
I haven't seen it yet. I did see Wolf. I kind of had a choice of those two. My wife and I decided to go with Scorsese over that one. I don't think she would have enjoyed that one as much, but I do hope to see that one soon.
Yeah, I want to see American Hustle. If I see Wolf of Wall Street, it'll probably be when it comes on TV sometime later. I'm not that interested in it.
Right. So. And then the last one is Killing Them Softly. That's another Brad Pitt vehicle. I'm trying to think. I'm not as prepared on these two because I saw them more recently and I hadn't added them. But there was something about this one. The director of it did something else famous, but I can't remember what it was now. You know, it was okay. It was a gangster movie, a hitman movie. The late James Gandolfini is in it, and he has a few things to do. But this is much more a talky character movie than any sort of action criminal movie. It's just a whole lot of scenes of Brad Pitt doing clever dialogue with other gangsters and arguing with them, and then occasionally somebody gets killed. So it's kind of boring from an action perspective, but it's much more of a talky, clever gangster dialogue movie. So, you know, it didn't make any of my top lists or anything. Here's my top 10 in order as I had them the last time I recorded them. Number 10, Olympus Has Fallen. Number 9, Elysium. Number 8, Despicable Me 2. Number 7, The Wolf of Wall Street. Number 6, The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug. Number 5, Now You See Me. Number 4, Parker. Number 3, Gravity. Number 2, The Wolverine. And number 1, Thor, The Dark World. And none of these movies were perfect, and they would have all been blown away by an Avengers or an Iron Man 1 or, you know, one of those really great movies from the last two or three years. But you know, yeah. All things told, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's something I will say. 2013 didn't have a movie that just – you know, rose above every other movie. I think for me, Pacific Rim is the one I remember the most, but it's, you know, it's light fare. So it doesn't hang with you.
Right.
And it didn't fill some, you know, childhood fantasy like the Avengers did. So
it's a sugary snack, but it was yummy. But
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And even Thor, The Dark World, which is my number one movie, had serious problems that we talked about. So, yeah, 2013 was a pretty disappointing movie year, particularly given that it had a Superman movie and a Star Trek movie and an Iron Man movie, and all three of them ended up being in the disappointing pile, if not worse. In fact, Iron Man 3 and Star Trek Into Darkness are the only two movies that I actually threw things at the screen. And you can probably guess what moment I threw things in both of those movies. So, All right. Well, we're out of time. We've had a good time, I think, covering all these films. We zipped through them pretty quickly. Oh, you got something else?
Well, no, I was going to ask. Yes. 2014.
Oh,
what are you looking forward to?
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy number one, just because I'm a cosmic Marvel guy and I love it. It's probably going to be stupid. That's okay. I'll enjoy it anyway. And
if the Guardians of the Galaxy were the actual, were the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I'd be on board with that. But I can't get excited about it.
It's the Dan Abnett Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm a huge Dan Abnett fan. I love Drax the Destroyer. I love Ronan the Accuser. I love Star-Lord. I love all these characters, and my kids are really excited to see Rocket Raccoon and Groot. So we are totally on board and ready for that movie. And
The Cap trailer blew me away.
Oh, Captain America Winter Soldier. Absolutely. That movie's going to rock. I was
worried about this movie because I don't like the Winter Soldier storyline, but I liked what I saw in the trailer.
I love the Winter Soldier storyline, and I can't wait to see it. I think it's one of the best things they've ever done in Captain America.
And get excited. There's a Godzilla movie coming out this year.
Oh, la, Godzilla. No. Oh, no.
I loved the teaser for that. I love the Robert Oppenheimer over thing. I loved using the 2001 music over it as the guys are haloing into the city. I'm excited. I don't expect it. You know, it's going to be a Godzilla movie. How deep can it get? But I hope it will be very enjoyable.
And I am looking forward to the third Hobbit movie to wrap that up. It was supposed to come out this summer, but I think they've pushed it back to December like the other five, you know, previous Tolkien movies.
I think that's probably a wise idea because I think it would get gobbled up in the summer.
Yeah.
And there's a Dwayne Johnson Hercules movie coming out directed by Brett Ratner.
Oh Lord.
I don't know what to think about that.
All right. On that note, I think we got to run. Thanks for joining me and rebooting the White Rocket, Bobby. We're going to get on out of here and I'm sure I'll have you back on again very soon to talk about some other topic of interest. We got to do an Iron Man show.
Yep.
All right. Well, the Rocket's going to get out of here. Welcome back to the show, and we'll see you all down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.